Now, a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. Okay, we know who that is, but pop quiz, without consulting your phones. What was Moses' mother's name?
Mom.
No. Anybody? 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 I was going to bring a prize for anybody who got this. Okay, well, we don't get that until chapter 6. Amram married his father's sister, Jochebed, who bore him Aaron and Moses. That's right. Moses' father married his aunt. Okay, so now let's look back at, back at this verse. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. Now, I guess there might have been a few exceptions out of the billions of mothers and children out there who have been born, but can we agree that we would be much more surprised if a mother did not find her child to be a fine child than we would when a mother sees her child as a fine child? In fact, the word translated as fine in Exodus 2 may be an understatement. Other translations use beautiful, wonderful, special, and other superlatives. And I'm sure all of those were true, but I'm not sure that his mother would have seen him any other way, even if he had been nothing special. But maybe I'm wrong. But I don't think I'm wrong in saying that mothers tend to see their babies and even their older children, their grown children, through the eyes of a mother, right? Now, look at Exodus 6. Well, no, we saw that. That's where we get Jochebed's name. All right. But let's continue. Okay, let's get over here. So it's not my glasses, really. It's just that I'm mixed up. So now let's get back to why Jochebed would need to hide her baby in the first place. Now, to really get the background, you've got to do some homework, go back to Genesis 30, and then read on through up to Exodus. But let's just remember for now that Jacob had 12 sons by several mothers, but he loved Rachel the most, and he loved her two sons the most, Joseph and Benjamin. Joseph's brothers were very jealous of him, and he almost validated their jealousy by telling them about the dreams that he had where they were all bowing down to him, even mom and dad. And they hated him so much that they planned to kill him, but they ended up selling him into slavery instead. And he ends up in Egypt in a man named Potiphar's house. And there he's falsely accused of sexual assault by his master's wife, and he's thrown into jail. But his good character, his wisdom, and God's blessings end up putting him in charge of all of Egypt, second only to Pharaoh himself. In that position, he oversaw the collection and the storage of food during 7 years of abundant crops, and then he oversaw the distribution of that food during 7 years of famine when very little was growing pretty much anywhere in their known world. So the famine was not only in Egypt, it included the region where Joseph's father and his not-so-nice brothers and their families lived. But they got so desperate that Jacob, their father, sent them to Egypt to beg for food. And they encountered Joseph but did not know they were encountering him. But eventually they ended up moving to Egypt at Joseph's behest, and they became sort of favored relatives of Joseph. There were only about 70 members of Jacob's household, including Joseph. So that wasn't a threatening minority among the Egyptians by any means. But here's where the problems began. So, now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died, but the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly, increasing in numbers, and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. Then a new king, to whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power in Egypt. "Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, we'll join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country. So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. And they built Pithom and Ramesses as store cities for Pharaoh. So the Egyptians made them slaves, and they oppressed them cruelly. But that didn't work out all that well. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites and worked them ruthlessly. Well, then the next step was even more cruel. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, the king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Shiphrah and Puah, when you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see that the baby is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, let her live. The midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live. Well, then it gets a shade worse, if that's possible. Then the Pharaoh gave this order to all his people, every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. So he's actually not ordering the Israelites to do that. He's ordering all of the Egyptians to take the babies of the Hebrews and throw them into the Nile. All right, so we see why Jochebed was hiding her fine baby boy. Back to where we started. Now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Now, I think that most men would feel sorry for a crying baby, especially in a basket in the river. But I do think that women have maternal instincts that go a little beyond most men's compassion for babies. And I think that the young woman's maternal instincts kicked in here. In fact, look at what she says. She ends up defying her own father's orders. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" She doesn't say, "No, we got to drown this baby." But let's go back to pop quiz number two. What was Moses' sister's name? This one you ought to get. Miriam, okay. At least my wife gets it, but I'm sure you all knew that. All right, so that doesn't come out until chapter 6 as well, but further into the chapter, the name of Amram's wife was Jochebed, a descendant of Levi, who was born to the Levites in Egypt. To Amram, she bore Aaron, Moses, and their sister, Miriam. Okay, so another back to the story. Yes, go. This is the answer of Pharaoh's daughter. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." So the woman took the baby and nursed him. Now, maybe you've seen the monetary value of a mother's many roles calculated at some point. You've probably seen something like this. How much is a mom worth? This is a more recent calculation than the first ones. As a child care provider, about $10,608 a month is what they're saying now. A private chef, $1,567 a month. A house cleaner, $2,727 a month. A driver, full-time driver, personal driver, $1,818. Seems low. And then a laundry worker seems really low, $181. But they're saying maybe the salary equivalent would be $178,000 a year or more. Well, look at this. Jochebed got paid to raise her own son. Wasn't that cool? So the reason that most parents and most mothers these days don't stay at home is because the assumption is that moms don't get paid. But here she got paid. She got to raise her own son and then pay him. However, when the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water." So that's where I got the title, Water Boy. This reminds me of Hannah. Remember, many years later, when the Israelites finally have entered into the promised land, and Hannah is this woman who couldn't have children, and she was very distressed by that. She had a rival wife, it says, and that wife had plenty of children, and she made fun of Hannah. And so Hannah said, if you'll just give me a child, I will give him back to your service. And so when she weaned Samuel, she took him to the tabernacle to serve. Well, this is a little bit different from that. What happened in Jochebed's case was, now God apparently had not let her in on his plans for Moses. It's not like Mary, you know, who was told what her son was going to become. Jochebed may have been very concerned about giving him up to live in the household of a Pharaoh who was an evil tyrant. Pharaoh's household worshipped as many as 2,000 gods and goddesses, and the God of Abraham was not among them. And so as Moses later leads the Israelites out of Egypt and they encounter some very difficult challenges, we will see that their devotion to God and trust in his protection did not go very deep for a lot of the Israelites. However, in the case of this horrible edict that Pharaoh had made, there were at least some women who feared God more than they feared Pharaoh. Shifra and Puah, the midwives, who are apparently in charge of all of the childbirths among the Israelites, refused to follow Pharaoh's edict because they feared God. And I would say that Jochebed also feared God, and she taught her children to fear God. Now, we don't know about Amram, the husband and the father. He's not the hero of the story, but he at least deserves some credit for not interfering with the plan, because he could have gotten in trouble. But we also don't know anything about Aaron's involvement in any of this. He's just a boy, but Miriam is pretty brave in the story as well, and she's just a girl. So it's the women who are the heroes here. And so this is a great story of the faith and courage of some of the women of Israel. But I think it especially highlights the love of a mother and the maternal instincts of a sister and the maternal instincts of the daughter of Pharaoh. It's an undeniable fact that motherhood is not only one of the most noble roles of all humanity, it is also one of the most influential and powerful, maybe the most influential and powerful. So, what are some of the ways that we can follow Jochebed's example, as well as the examples of Shifra, Puah, and Miriam? Well, first of all, there is no power we should fear but God. The Egyptians, think about this, had the opportunity to learn to fear the one true God from the Israelites, who were their neighbors. But instead, they chose to follow their gods who did not provide protection or comfort or love. If Pharaoh was any indication of the character that was formed by faith in their gods, we don't see any qualities or values that made for happy lives, do we? He was so stubborn, he was so lacking in humility that there was not one Egyptian mother in the future who does not wake up one morning to the loss of their oldest child. All on one day, when the angel of death passed over the Israelites' houses but takes every firstborn son of the Egyptians. And that was, of course, the first Passover. But the lesson that was supposed to be learned in all of those plagues that will come when baby Moses grows up to become the leader of the Israelites was that the one true God was supreme over all of the gods they worshipped who were supposed to be providers and rulers of the various aspects of nature. We are living in a culture of fear and death that worships other gods. Those in our culture who do not share our faith in God are controlled by their gods that demand everything and return nothing. Our culture fears poverty, fears diseases, fears authority, fears natural disasters, fears environmental catastrophes, fears nuclear weapons. And when you look beneath the surface, there's a deep fear of being held responsible for choices. And so different truths and morality is created so that they won't fear being held responsible for their choices. So we can be free from all of those fears if we fear God only. Now, when we talk about the fear of God, I always try to remember the goal that's set in 1 John. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. And again, that word that's translated perfect also can mean mature, and it's talking about not ever growing up. I mean, when we're kids, we do fear our moms. We do fear punishment. But the truth is that if we grow up to love, you know, unless something really bad goes wrong in our childhood, we're going to grow up to do what they want us to do, not out of fear, but out of love. Okay, so how much more should we love God and please and seek to please Him? All right, so next, we should honor our mothers. Many mothers in our country and our time have enjoyed the love and devotion and respect of their families and the larger community. But there are very few mothers, if any, who have not faced some very difficult and heartbreaking realities. For my own mother, I'm sure that the most difficult thing was the accidental death of her firstborn child. His name was Carl. And for those of you who have not heard the story, he was a 15-year-old, almost Eagle Scout, lacking only one merit badge because there was no one to instruct the life-saving course. We called him Carl Roy, but his friends called him Carl. But his middle name was Roy. But after several weeks of quarantine at home due to infectious hepatitis, he finally got to go back to school. Well, his best friend was making a wooden bowl in shop class, and Carl Roy was watching as he waited to go to lunch with him. And the bowl was spinning on a lathe, possibly as high as 2,500 RPM, and it came apart. And one of the pieces hit Carl Roy in the head, cracked his skull open at the suture lines, and he never regained consciousness. My mother was pregnant with me at the time, which no doubt made it even a little harder, but she and the rest of the family were traumatized along with the whole community. It was a small town, Moses Lake, Washington. That's not something a mother gets over. And many mothers have suffered the loss of more than one child, and we say that it's not supposed to happen that way. Parents are not supposed to outlive their children. But they often do, and I really suspect that it's often hardest for mothers, as hard as it is for fathers and brothers and sisters. Well, the second hardest thing I believe that my mother had to deal with was the loss of faith on the part of one of my brothers. He was in college and had been a Christian for several years, but he came home one day and he sat my parents down to tell them that he was not sure that Jesus was the Son of God. That was hard. Now, thankfully, he is now once again at least active in a church. I haven't discussed the details of his faith with him, but I assume that it's because he now does believe that Jesus is the Son of God. But being a mother is not an easy job, and it's often even more difficult when the job at home part is over, and mom has to just watch her children make sometimes harmful and hurtful choices in life. Although the hard work and the difficulties and tragedies of motherhood cannot be denied, most women are still drawn to motherhood and find nothing to be more important to them during what we call the childbearing years. And this brings up something I always try to emphasize on this day. Please remember those women that you know who wanted children, but who were never able to have them. Do whatever you can to assure them that although motherhood is certainly one of the most noble roles a woman can fulfill in our world, it's definitely not the only noble role a woman can fulfill. Every woman, as well as every man, is designed by God to fulfill an important role in our world as children of God who are created in His image. And then finally, we can expect great things to come out of persecution and suffering. I seriously doubt that Jochebed or any other Israelite, especially not the women, thought that anything good was happening during the time that their baby boys were being thrown into the Nile. But God brought deliverance through one of those baby boys who came out of the Nile. So I don't know what you may be suffering now, but I do know that it is not even close to defeat if you're following Jesus. The greatest lesson of all is the salvation for all mankind that came as a result of Jesus suffering on the cross as his mother watched him die for our sins. Let's pray.